How about that? On Adrian Ruiz on trumpet. Andre Hayward on trombone. Mike Malone on saxophone. That was Red Young on the piano. John Framgen on bass. Hey, Brandon. Brandon Temple on drum. Where'd they go? Oh, well, I'll get those chairs. Oh, there they are. Thanks very much. So that's the bebop. Charlie Parker. Thank you. That's Debbie. Thank you so much. And Bud Powell. And that's just an offering of, you know, what can be done as we define sort of who we are within the maelstrom of, you know, the world we may not quite understand or cotton to every moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you say, first of all, that was fantastic. I mean, it's like we are the luckiest people in the world sometimes.
Right?
I feel that, yeah. That's really incredible.
And how about this in Austin, y'all? These are working, wonderful musicians. Go support them. As we realize how broken we might be, we recognize how we get to be healed by such offerings and gifts. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
You said something really interesting, which was
thank you.
One time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Which was who we
are.
Was
it back in December?
2013, I think.
Hey, we've been doing this for a while. June
Since
of
2011.
Well, 11. 11. We were up
Since
here.
Since June of 2011.
You and me in a boombox, remember that?
Yep, that's true. Jazz and...
The Art of the Cold War.
The Art of the Cold War. That was our first show.
Don't laugh at that. It
the
was
days.
Funny. It was good. It was adorable. I had hair.
But first you play jazz, then you betray your country. That's it. But I, you know, there's, you said in our idea of who we are, you know, and that is, that's something really interesting, this idea that we are someone, we are one person, or we are a self, you know, that we have, that we contain something, when in actuality we are many, many, many things and people and constantly becoming, you know, but there is this idea once you have, once you are a commodity, once you are...
An algorithm.
Once you're bought and sold, that's who you are. So really for any of us, you know, and especially for musicians during this period, maintaining or being able to go through life in any type of normalcy was quite phenomenal because of what was happening.
For sure. And I think people had to, especially jazz musicians, the ones that were honoring, had to navigate a lot of things, had to navigate race, had to navigate economics, had to navigate their sense of self and their sense of vertigo with the world, and certainly everyone had to process, you know, after the wars as well, World War I and World War II, and the horror of what we're capable of.
And, you know, as we were talking about this show, I said, you mentioned all the musicians we feature, and I said, there are no women. And you said, yeah, I left them out.
No,
and
I said, I was like, I'm going through a tunnel, I'll call you back.
Yeah, that's right. Said. My phone just went away.
And colonoscopy?
Yeah.
I didn't.
The thing is, though, I mean, it's not as if women weren't... Well, I mean,
They're not crazy. Women are not crazy.
Well, women... The history of women in psychiatry and psychology, the history of psychology, that's an interesting history in itself.
Are we doing the quote right now? Can I do the quote?
Okay, do the quote.
Sigmund Freud... The great question that has never been answered, and which I have not yet been able to answer despite my 30 years of research into the feminine soul, is, what does a woman want?
Bless him. Bless him.
Adorable.
Adorbs. Ah, Freud. Wrong about just about everything. But he was a good writer. You know... The funny thing is, though, you know, there, like, obviously women were struggling with mental illness, but women were also taking care of men, you know, during this time. And if we think about the whole unit, you know, there were women who were not only part of it because they were holding the heads of Bud Powell, you know, when he was in the car on the way to the hospital, or say Nika, you know, as she was taking care of Thelonious Monk. She left behind 5 children in Mexico in order to do that and to take care of jazz musicians. But there was a lot of sacrifice that was being done.
Yes, ma'am.
So talk about some of those women.
For certain. And I think Nika is a great example. We honored her when we were speaking of Monk. And Mary Lou Williams was an important aspect and part of Thelonious Monk's life as well. When Miles Davis was figuring out his life, he left his 3 children with Betty Carter and moved to Paris. And so I think that in addition to the sort of the infrastructure that men and others depend on, that people are going to take care of, right? That women themselves are struggling. I mean, we've highlighted Billie Holiday or Sarah Vaughan or many others who also had, in addition to the struggles that the men had additional struggles of being women in a misogynistic society. So for sure, and I think that a whole, you're giving me great ideas, you know, not Matt Riley, just you, that these future Views and Brews Jazz can be talking about these sort of caregiving, like the art of this kind of caregiver, because they're not in the spotlight at all. And they're the ones who enabled, and I mean that in a positive way, the artists, whether they're men or otherwise, to go out and sort of seek wholeness and healing.
Yeah, and it goes back to Aristotle, this idea of like jazz and, or not jazz, and Aristotle, sorry about that. But
I thought you
know
what?
I've gotten a collective 6 hours of sleep in the last 7 days.
I thought you were going with Aristotle and Onassis. I was excited. I was very excited where you were going with that.
This idea of mental illness or just kind of being a little bit outside of the normal role of society and art. You know, the artist is just outside of everything else.
And that's necessary, though.
It's necessary, but it's also a mythology that we perpetuate that it's something we do instead of saying, why not take care of our mental health? You know, why not really focus on how to be healthy and to be part of society? It supports,
I don't think those
that
things
idea
are the same.
Of being outside of society.
I don't think they're the same. I don't think that one cures mental health or enables mental health by being part of a society. I think one, you know, recognizes one's own sense of self within society, which is not the same thing. Just because you're in a society and getting along doesn't mean that you're keeping it together. I mean, it just seems to be, again, to use your word, a commodification of things. And I think that there's a beauty and a necessity to keep, no matter if you're a musician or not, to keep yourself outside of the society and not get caught up in the ratings or the news cycle or whatever is going on, because it's a fool's errand, ultimately. And if one can know what it is, but recognize that you can exist outside of it, I think that there's progress to be made there.
Mm-hmm. What did Thelonious Monk say? The 5 spot is lost. I'm here.
Right, right. So, you want to? Did you tell that story?
Well, no.
So speaking of Thelonious Monk, you know, he ultimately. So he had this really great gig in 1957 in the 5 spot in New York, and he would go off for extended breaks. Okay, you guys are still good. So they go, I don't know, you go off.
He might be on the roof, who knows?
And somebody working at the 5 spot would go, and he saw him sort of looking up at the moon on the corner of, and he said, Thelonious, are you lost? And he said, I'm not lost. The 5 spot is lost. Which I think is really beautiful.
I'm here.
Yeah, here I am. So he also had some trouble with the police. The things keep coming. These stories keep being told. Beaten by the police when he was with Nika in 1958. It was her drugs that they found, but he wouldn't say anything about it. So they beat him, of course.
He also covered for Bud Powell.
He did, indeed. He was hospitalized on several occasions. The media, speaking of, wanted to make him a big deal. And he was on the cover of Time magazine. He was really an extraordinary talent. They called him Mad Monk. Mad Monk. Come see Mad Monk, you know. So there's a whole, you know, there's a blending of instability and clerical, you know, whatever that is. So I think that that was, I don't think that did him any favors.
There's also kind of this idea of what Anna Freud, you know, Sigmund Freud's daughter, talks about, and that's getting lost, you know, in childhood. As she has a great essay on childhood as getting lost safely, because you are always kind of taken care of by your parents in a healthy situation, but you're able to wander and get lost. And I think the more that we lose that ability to get lost, maybe we seek it out, you know, in daily life, like in shopping malls or places where we can kind of get lost safely. But what was he looking for when he was getting lost?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that interior life is really beautiful, and I don't think it needs to be necessarily expounded upon. And I think that I've, you know, when people work out, that's a thing people do. They have something called spotters. Is that it?
You and I used to run together, so don't act like you don't know.
Right. So there's spotters. So the mystical journey, one needs somebody who keeps you rooted, and to get lost safely, if you will, if you want to use, or to get into wonder safely, one can certainly do that. And I think that there's no, but and I think that certain things need to be, you know, kept private. And when we get to Charles Mingus, you know, his psychoanalyst told him to write out his stuff, which became his autobiography, Beneath the Underdog. But Monk and others and many, I think there's a valor in keeping certain interior thoughts private and letting them manifest in different ways. And I think that's where art comes from. You know, I think that that's when people, you know, have, with all due respect to our social media, commodify their life in such micro bursts, whether they get haircuts or they're doing whatever they do. I think that really loses a real sense of the human endeavor. And I think there's a mysteriousness that has to linger for us to have that sense of not being funky butts to each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So shall we take a few questions and then hear our last?
There's like 16 more songs.
16.
We're going to leave one out. There's three more songs. Can we do three more?
Yeah, I think that's beautiful.
Okay?
Shall we take some questions and
you
then
do what you want to do? It's super good. However, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah?
Love some songs. I love some questions.
You'd love some questions.
Can I just say something real quick, though?
Yeah, if you want to.
Is that okay?
I think so.
Because I want to read this thing. You know, Allen Ginsberg? Yeah, so he officiated, I just wanted to say this, he officiated Charles Mingus' wedding at Bill Cosby's house. It's true. I love that, just that's great. So Allen Ginsberg, Charles Mingus' third wife, he officiates the wedding at Bill Cosby's house. But he wrote this poem long before that, in 1955, called Howl, right? And he wrote it for a guy named Carl Solomon. And I just want to do the first part. It's a little dated, the language, so excuse me, but I'm going to quote him. But just the first part. And I think this sets up a real sense of politics and race and who is and who what and the commodification of mental illness, which I'd like to avoid. But I just want to bring this up. Okay? He writes, I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo in the machinery at night, who poverty and tatters and hollowed-eyed and high set up smoking in the supernatural darkness of cold water flats floating across the tops of cities contemplating jazz. And he wrote that for Carl Solomon, who wrote a book later called Report from the Asylum, Afterthoughts of a Shock Patient. And Carl Solomon and Allen Ginsberg met in a mental hospital in 1949, where Carl Solomon, and I think this is politically, speaking of race, white guy, voluntarily institutionalized himself as a Dadaist symbol of defeat. So I think that sense of even privilege, even in that weird place, among people who might be able to get away with things or not get beat up by people just because they're black, I think is a very interesting intersection point of where we are. We're talking about Bud Powell, we're talking about Miles Davis, who himself was beaten up, Thelonious Monk, but you know, Carl Solomon, you know, goes and says, I'm gonna be a Dadaist, and I'm gonna go and I'm gonna write about this, and that sense of weird witness, I think I just wanted to mention, because it's not the same. The suffering is not the same.
So what do you think? Shall we take some questions?
Sure.
Okay, let's do it. I don't know where to go from Ginsberg. I mean, I'm like, that is, you know, we could go for days.
Well, but it's important because there was this whole beatnik sort of layer of, again, sort of fetishizing or commodifying the sense of, and I want to say it's very serious.
It's very serious. And I think, like, you know, just the act of existing in a world, you know, a world that considers you other.
Right.
For whatever reason.
That's what I mean.
That is traumatic.
You know, when the day comes when everybody dresses up like Thelonious Monk, you know, things are lost at that point. And everybody's in the beret or comes in with the, you know, because he's trying to cope. And when everybody sort of takes on that coping, then where do you, the people who need to cope go?
Yeah.
When they see mirrors of themselves in imperfect ways.
Okay. Feel free to not ask a question, but if you would like to, just raise your hand. Amy or Jack will come to you. Is there a question? We silence these people.
Y'all, seriously?
It's kind of incredible.
It's been 7 months. All right. So.
Oh, go for it.
I have a question. It's not really about the mental health aspect, but something you said earlier about bebop and, you know, sort of this reclaiming this the art form for themselves. And I'm wondering, did it work? Because when I think of bebop, I think of fans like Allen Ginsberg and people like that. And I'm just wondering, you know, the other thing you said was that it wasn't dance music. And it doesn't matter what race you are, everybody loves to dance. So how did that go over in the black community if the idea was staking our claim for our art form?
Well, I think it was an important and legitimate moment that was in reaction to a particular time, but it certainly didn't define the genre of jazz in the 20th century. It was subsumed in a larger innovation that included Miles Davis, one of the innovators of bebop himself, ultimately was playing cool jazz, right? Something that, again, these terms are interesting. But I think that jazz, which is why I think it's one of the most dynamic American art forms that we have, I think is why we can define ourselves and see ourselves in the various iterations of the music as it continued to develop. And I think that the way that we're reclaiming it here allows us, you know, there are certain things that you could dance to, and I think that once the innovation happens, then the next innovation happens as well. For example, at the same time, let's just say, this is a little bit beyond the subject, in 1959, let's say you had a release of Dave Brubeck, just a particular kind of music, and Ornette Coleman, right? It's a very different kind of music, so that maybe spells the success as opposed to just sort of thinking that we're in a particular place. I think bebop among musicians was a particular language, and once that language was expressed, it becomes part of a larger lexicon.
Another question? Yeah, right here. Just wait for Jack. He's coming. Because we are recording. Go ahead.
So what are the examples of jazz musicians who brought to light their mental health condition publicly? And how did they incorporate that into their work, and how did that affect them?
Great question. Thank you. And I think, again, there's very little, speaking again as a clergyman, no joking, we don't know much about mental health, not just clergymen. I don't think I think we do our best with it. So I think as we're thinking about all of this, I think this is something that is still in the air, and it's not something I'd heard of until I did some research for this. There's a really interesting effort right now by a man named Sam Miltich. You guys know who he is? Sam Miltich, he's in Minnesota. He's a guitarist, and he is actually doing a project called The Improvised Life. It's actually going on right now, and it's just sponsored just last couple of weeks by the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And he chronicles through his music and through his journey, his schizophrenia. And it's a very interesting, I was reading a little bit about it in terms of this. And I think we're still on the cusp of trying to understand and legitimize a sense of talking about mental illness. I mean, again, how many of you grew up when you just didn't even say the word, the C word, right? Cancer. Did anybody grow up like that? and the word suicide. These were sort of verboten. These were they were not discussed publicly. I mean, we had that great opening with Funky Butt, and then we went into suicide. And you guys were like, oh my god, right? So, but you know, so I think that we're still trying to figure that out. But I think if you're interested, you know, Miles Davis wrote an autobiography, which is very interesting. I don't think he discusses mental health specifically. He just talks about his life. Charles Mingus has a very interesting autobiography. But if you're interested in what's going on right now, you want to follow this guy, Sam Miltich, M-I-L-T-I-C-H. I think he's on the forefront of really living this way and sort of saying you can be a successful, in his case, jazz guitarist, and well, as well as have a family and root oneself in both the wonders of science and medication, as well as music as a social healing.
There's also a fantastic jazz trumpeter, Tom Harrell, who just celebrated a birthday on Sunday, who is schizophrenic and plays a lot in New York. And he has been open about his schizophrenia as much as he can be open about his schizophrenia, but he's still performing and a really phenomenal musician.
So I think we're still in the beginnings of all of that, even in 2019. And I think that that's one of the reasons we wanted to highlight this idea, too.
I interviewed a few years ago Steven Weinberg, and he said he was asked about the theory of everything, you know, and when will we find the theory of everything? And he said, you know, I think that's really a bad title, because even if we do figure out what goes on with the universe, we still won't understand the human brain.
Well, it's our task. So it's good, I think. I think that the necessity of speaking about it, of being open and vulnerable, I think allow us to move a little bit forward. And if we wall ourselves off, and I know I said that certain things should be private, I agree, but we should certainly talk about and chronicle the struggles that we have in ways of improving ourselves.
So, last few tunes?
Yeah, so we're going to play a few more tunes. We're going to leave off Everything Happens to Me, okay? So we're going to play All Blues, which is a Miles Davis tune,
woo!
Which is really great, y'all, really great, okay? And then we're going to play, before that, I'm sorry. We're going to play before that, we're going to play Monk's Dream, which is Thelonious Monk. And I think it's going to be a really interesting and beautiful tune, followed by All Blues, the Miles Davis tune. And then we're going to end with Charles Mingus, an elegy he wrote for Lester Young, who had his own challenges. It's called Goodbye Pork Pie Hat. And I just want to mention this. One thing that Mingus was playing once with Charlie Parker and Bud Powell, and it was a really, it must have been very, very sad, because in 1955, right, Bud Powell was struggling, and he had to be sort of escorted off the stage. You just couldn't make it. And Charlie Parker, who had his own trouble, evidently started just chanting into the microphone when Bud Powell was obviously struggling. He just kept saying, Bud Powell. Bud Powell just went on and on, and he left Bud Powell. He just kept doing it. And Mingus is there in 1955, and he says into another microphone, ladies and gentlemen, please don't associate me with any of this. This is not jazz. These are sick people. Who, coming from Charles Mingus, is hilarious. So I just think that that's really interesting, and I wanted to link the generations together with Goodbye Pork Pie Hat, right? With Lester Young, who himself struggled, and I think those frustrations of not getting in Mingus's case, decent education, knowing he was a few steps behind people, knowing who couldn't make it in his first love, which was classical music, I think is a very interesting way. So I think you'll enjoy Monk's Dream by Thelonious Monk, of course, All Blues by Miles Davis, and finishing with Goodbye Pork Pie Hat by Charles Mingus. So we welcome our musicians back up. You got it? You good? So again, everyone, thank you, Debbie. Mike Malone on the saxophone. Andre Hayward on trombone. Adrian Ruiz on trumpet. John Fremgen on bass. There he is. Brannon Temple on drums. and Mr. Red Young on the piano. So enjoy these tunes, everybody. And all about Rebecca McEnroy for putting this together. So stick around. These are beautiful songs, and I think you'll enjoy them.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
John Fremgen, bass. Brandon Temple, drums. Andre Hayward, trombone. And vocalese. Adrian Ruiz, trumpet. Mike Malone, saxophone. And our wonderful staff, and Rebecca McEnroy for KUT and Views and Brews. And may all that we hold and are holding, may we walk out of here a little bit more healed and a little bit more whole, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rabbi Neil Blumhoff, thank you. Please join us for our next jazz as we explore the art of colonoscopy.
No,
I'm kidding. We're not. No, we're not. Have a beautiful evening. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. Thank you. Take care.